everybody, and welcome to a podcast to be named later. Baseball fans, and welcome to today's edition of a podcast to be aiming later. I had some difficulties with the technicals over here, but we are up and running and ready to go here. I'm your host, Chris Mitchell. Very happy to be talking some baseball with you today. And this is week number 4 in Major League Baseball, and we're doing the National League recap today with George Kurtz from RotoExperts.com. Lots to get to, lots going on. And we're going to get into it as much as we can. We're going to talk a little bit about D. Gordon and Jake Arrieta. Those of you out there that listened to my American League podcast with Brandon C. Williams the other day, we touched on these topics a little bit, but I want to get George's take because he has a little bit of a different take. And today is specifically the National League edition of the NL recap. So we're going to talk about D. Gordon and Jake Arrieta with them, with George Kurtz today. We're also going to go division by division and break down the horse race. Some surprises going on in Major League Baseball, God forbid. I know that's a shocker. That's a surprise in and of itself, but does anybody realize that while the Cardinals are only 13-13, their offense is getting it done? They've got 153 runs scored, which leads the National League. They not only lead in runs scored, they lead in home runs. And not only do they lead in home runs, but they lead by 12. The Cubs have 28. The Giants of all teams have 28 home runs, and the Cardinals have 40. I don't know what's going on with this St. Louis offense. I mean, granted, not that they were ever seen as a futile offense, but for them to be leading the National League in runs scored and home runs, that to me surprised me. They also lead in OPS, but that's not a shocker. You lead in home runs and runs, and you happen to also lead in OPS. I think that goes hand in hand. But that to me was a surprise as I was doing some research and just following along with what's going on in the National League. Everyone's talking about how dominant the Cubs are, and they look really good. And I'm going to ask George Kurtz that question today. Are the Cubs this dominant? Are they the runaway best team in baseball, or at least the National League? I think most people think they're the runaway best team in all baseball. And with this start, I think that just confirms what people already thought. The Washington Nationals are just as good. That, to me, I expected the Nationals to be good. And I actually thought that the Mets were going to miss the playoffs this year, even if that was my prediction, based on a variety of different things. One, I thought the NL East would be a little bit better. The Mets would fall back a little bit. But also that the Nationals would be better than they were last year, a decent amount better than last year. But they're 18-7, one game behind the Cubs in the loss column, and they're tied in the win column. The Cubs are 18-6. So for the Nationals to be that good, and yet we're talking about how dominant the Cubs are, that tells me that the Nationals story has to be a little bit surprising. So I'm going to ask George Kurtz about that as well. And, of course, we'll talk about all three divisions the best we can. The NL West, that is just a weird, unpredictable situation going on there. I think it's going to be that way all season. I don't know if I look at any of these teams and say, wow, this team is dreadful or this team is dominant, with the exception of the Padres. If you're going to talk about the Padres early in the season, my argument would probably be that they've been better than you would expect. They're still 10-16. They're still going to have a bad season. But that tells you a little bit about what that division's like when the Padres are supposed to be disgraceful, and they probably will be. And then the other four teams, who know? Well, actually, the Rockies, maybe that's another story. They're 12-13 and third in the division right now, only two games back in the win column for the San Francisco Giants, and one game in the win column behind the Dodgers. The fact that the Rockies are even close probably tells you what you need to know about the sample size argument. But nonetheless, this is a weird division. I think it's going to be a strange one all season long, and I'll talk to George Kurtz about that as well. If you want to talk to me on Twitter or George Kurtz, you can always do that. At CJMitch73 for me, at George Kurtz for George. And we do have a Facebook page if you want to get involved and start talking baseball with us. It's a podcast to be named later. Just go on over there, request acceptance into the group, and then post all the comments, any topics you feel like talking to. Bring it to us. We'll talk about it, and we'll debate it. But let's bring George Kurtz into the program today. He writes for RotoExperts.com, also appears as a radio host on SiriusXM. George, always great talking baseball. Usually we're talking Red Sox and Yankees. Today we're talking some National League through 4 weeks of the season. How's the baseball season been treating you?
Well, so far so good, right? I guess I can complain. Right now, the Yankee fan, things are going well there. Mets are playing great. My fan teams are doing well. Really no complaints about baseball.
And real quickly, before we get to D. Gordon, Jake Arrieta, and the player in focus, you're the closer guy out there, rotoexperts.com. Let me ask you real quickly about Aroldis Chapman. What's his due date? When's he going to be back? When will he be back versus when will he actually be on the mound in New York rather than doing rehab, or if he's doing that at all, I don't know. I guess that's the story. What is the Aroldis Chapman story, and is he the closer the day he arrives in New York officially? It's tough to move Andrew Miller out of the closer's role when he's been so amazing, and you've got Dellin Betances, who he's not going to be the closer, I wouldn't assume, but he's been so good, too, to demote those guys. That can't be an easy thing to do, but what's the story there in New York for them?
Well, I guess the joke right now would be, does it matter? Yankees can't win anyway. Who cares? They don't need a closer. So, but to answer your question, he's back May 9th. He's back May 9th no matter what. Yankees could have 18 rainouts in a row. He's back May 9th. You know, it's not a game suspension. It was a date. You know, you spend it for this amount of days, whatever it came out to, that's when he's back. Will he become the closer or right off the bat? I would assume so. You know, it's, once again, and you don't know what Girardi might do, but the plan always was, he comes back, he's the closer, Miller and Betances then become 7th and 8th inning guys, depending on the opposing lineups, or depending if they want to use Betances for more than an inning. You know, I don't think they really haven't done that with Miller, where he goes inning in a third or inning in 2/3. They have done that with Betances. So suppose the Yankees, you know, the starting pitcher only goes 5 1/3, well, you really bring in Betances to finish up the 6th, Grover 7th, Miller 8th, Chapman 9th, that sort of thing. But they'll rotate it somewhat depending on the situation there. So that's the plan. Chapman back May 9th. He may not be the close of May 9th. Maybe it takes a couple of days. Maybe Girardi wants to put him in the bullpen, stay for a game or two. That's normal. You know, but certainly I would expect it sooner rather than later for him to be the closer by May 9th. Certainly no later than, let's say, you know, 3-4 games after May 9th.
Could you see a scenario other than a complete and total disaster where Chapman would be removed from the closer role with the Yankees at some point, or that they do a kind of closer by committee or something? I mean, Chapman's a lefty, Miller's a lefty, so there's not a natural split there. But could you imagine a scenario, again, other than a major injury or a major collapse by Chapman, where he isn't the closer in New York?
Sure, because the scenario would be this. The reason why Chapman agreed to the suspension and didn't fight it was because he kept his free agent status. So now he's a free agent at the end of the year. He doesn't have to worry about a certain amount of days. If he would have been unavailable or on a suspension for it, he would have lost that. The Yankees would have had his control. So he's definitely a free agent. That means the Yankees won't have any allegiance to him. They know he's probably gone at the end of the year. You know, I wouldn't think they're going to keep Miller, Betances, and Chapman and pay Chapman, what, $14, $15 million a year on a 4 or 5 year contract with $75 million? I doubt that. So there's no allegiance to Chapman here. You know, so, yeah, there's always a chance. But I fully expect Chapman to be the Yankees' closer, like I said. If not May 9th, like I said, maybe Girardi wants to see him. I'll pitch once or twice to the Yankees in a non-save role, 7th inning, 8th inning. And then he puts him in as the closer. One thing you can also consider, but this doesn't really matter, because where Chapman goes, he'll be a closer, I would assume anyway. If the Yankees keep playing this poorly, he'll be traded. There'll be no reason for the Yankees to hold on to him. You know, he'll be dealt. So that could also be something you might want to consider. But as I say, I would expect no matter what team he gets dealt to, I guess I can't say every team, but 90% of teams, he's the closer anyway. But that might be something you want to consider as well. And that also means maybe you don't want to drop Andrew Miller so quick. You know, you may want to hold on to it just in case that happens. Because let's not forget, there's nothing wrong with holding a top-flight setup man. Because Miller's going to strike out a ton of batters. So he's going to help you somewhat in that category. He'll help your ratios. He's not going to help you as far as, you know, really building up counting stats. But everything else is okay. And, you know, you keep just in case Chapman does fail, in case Chapman does get traded, you still got that closer. You may want to confess that I wouldn't automatically drop Miller. It really comes down to your roster construction and what you need.
Are the Yankees this bad? I mean, other than the Atlanta Braves, they're the worst team in baseball. They have 3 less losses than a couple of the other bad teams like the Twins. But at 8-15, they have the same amount of wins as all the worst teams in baseball other than the Braves, who are really, they're a double-A team at best. They may not even be a double-A team. Byron Buxton probably can't dominate double-A right now. He was demoted. But are the Yankees this bad? Because you mentioned the trade element of Aroldis Chapman. And if they're this futilely bad, it surprises me. Not that I thought the Yankees would be dominant, but I didn't expect them to be 8-15 in a relatively mediocre AL East. So that surprised me. Are they this bad where a trade seems, I mean, another month like this, a trade will, in all likelihood, happen? Are the Yankees this bad, or is it just a bad stretch?
I'm probably more inclined right now to say bad stretch, but that being said, they're not a good team. You know, when you and I did our preseason predictions, I had between 81 and 84 wins, and I had them right around 500. You know, maybe they'll fight for a wild card. I had them third in the division. Now, they're playing worse than that, and what Brian Cashman said is true. No one's hitting. It's just amazing. Everyone's in a slump at the same time. Now, the question is, obviously all these guys aren't going to be this bad all year long, but some are. You know, Chase Hudson looks lost. He was lost last year. You know, what makes everyone think he's going to break out of it now? He looks lost. You know, Gregorius will hit better. Cashman's been fine. Teixeira will hit his pop, but you know, his 25-30 home run is going to come along with a .230 batting average. Just the way it is. Nothing's changed there. Beltran's been fine. Ellsbury is what he is now. He'll have some stretches where he looks really good, but most of it, not so much. Certainly not worth the money. And once again, Gardner is what he is. So I don't know if the hitting's going to change dramatically. It will score runs. It's not going to be pathetic as it's been, but it's not going to be lights out either. The pitching, listen, we knew this going in tonight. It was held together by duct tape. You know, Tanaka's been good, not great. Severino's been terrible for whatever reason. Sophomore jinx. Think he can throw the ball by everybody. Right now, Severino's a thrower rather than a pitcher. You have to learn you can't do that up here. You know, you have to pitch. You have to hit your spots. You have to change speed, change eye levels. He's not doing that. But he will. I imagine he will. He'll get to that. You know, Nova is what he is. Sabathia is what he is. You know, they're blah guys. Iavaldi's certainly been disappointing. Iavaldi was bad for the first, 6 weeks last year, 2 months. Then was good, really good. Then got hurt. Well, he's sort of following that same path again. So that's a problem for the Yankees. And like I said, the pitching, if everything clicks well, the pitching can be good. But everything has to click well. Listen, the Yankees Chris are this. And you and I think you and I both know this. They know they have to rebuild, but don't want to, you know, just break everything down. They still want to compete. That's what they're trying to do, and that is so difficult to, you know, compete and rebuild at the same time. They know they have the youngsters coming up in probably 2 years, 3 years. So, but they still want to compete. They can't sell to the New York fans that we're going to be terrible, that we're going to do what the Astros did, do what the Cubs did, or what the Braves are doing now. You know, the nasty word, tank. They can't afford to do that, and they know that. So they're trying to put a product on the field that's acceptable and rebuild at the same time. Difficult to do. It worked last year, not working now. Bottom line is, Yankees won't be a good team again for about 2 years. You know, once the A-Rod's contract's off the books, Sabathia's, Teixeira's, you know, Hagley, all these contracts come off the book. There's over $100 million there. And then the youngsters come in, Aaron Judge, the Caprellians, the Mateos, guys like this, that'll sort of rejuvenate the team. But it's going to take time. You know, bottom line is, in a perfect business world, the Yankees should really strip it down and start from scratch. But they won't do that. They're going to keep trying. And unlike in 2005, when the Cashman was able to call up Cano and Chen Ming-Wang to sort of, rejuvenate the team, they also won the division, the Yankees don't have projects who are ready to do that. There's no fair basis in the Yankee system to take over for Chase Headley. You know, there's no pitcher that's really close to help with the starting pitching rotation. They don't have the depth they used to have. Not top-end depth. They have, you know, 4, 5, 6 guys, but no 1, 2, 3s. You know, that needs about a year, 2 years to come. So that's the biggest problem with the Yankees. They have a decent farm system, but it's really 2 years away from developing fruit. And they're still trying to fight for it from here on. I don't know what they can do, Chris. And I've been a Yankee fan all my life. I'm 47 years old. I can't remember the last time when legitimately I wonder if they're going to be sellers at the trade deadline.
Yeah, that's something that we've gotten used to up here in Boston. The sellers tag has been part of the Red Sox story as July comes along for the last two seasons. And it's not a great story. It's not one I like. It's a horror. It's a freak show. But it is something that happens to most organizations, though, granted, not very often to the Yankees. It's looking that way now. The one thing I'm concerned about with them is that they keep doing the same thing over and over, which is they're trying to do, like you said, both. They're trying to balance winning, contending, while also building. And like as you said, it's very difficult to do that. You have to draft and develop extremely well, which is what the Red Sox have done. The Red Sox have done a very good job at trying to compete. Unfortunately, the last 2 years, they've been awful at it, but their minor league system is really good. And so they've done kind of half of it. They failed at trying to compete the last 2 years, but the minor league system's really strong in that. And you look at that Red Sox team right now, they're very young. If you're looking at our future and you say, wow, the last 2 years have been just miserable. And, of course, the Pablo Sandoval signing was horrible. And the Hanley Ramirez signing was varying degrees of good or bad, depending on how you look at it. Hanley Ramirez is seen as a success this year, but he's not hitting home runs. And his offensive production, you could argue, is good or bad or just mediocre. So you could argue that that's a horrible deal, too. But you look at the rest of this roster, Eduardo Rodriguez's future is pretty bright. You look at Mookie Betts. You look at even Jackie Bradley, if you can still consider him young. Xander Bogaerts is one of the better all-around shortstop. There's some nice pieces in Boston. Christian Vasquez. Being a fantasy guy, I focus more on the offensive side of all positions, so I was kind of excited about Blake Swihart. But as I'm doing more and more of these baseball stuff for minorleagueball.com and just talking baseball in general, seeing Christian Vasquez, the way he plays defensively, is amazing. It made me realize that defense at the catcher position is probably significantly more important than offense. And from a fantasy perspective, that's not an easy thing to acknowledge. But the pitchers are better when Vasquez is in there, and the team is just better. I mean, he picks guys off at first. He shuts down the running game. It's amazing what Christian Vasquez can do from a defensive perspective. And to me, I've come around on that. I hate catchers in fantasy because they all stink. But I still look at the position for offense. But from a baseball perspective, I definitely want – I used to think you should trade Vasquez and keep Swihart. Now I'm not even close to that debate. I'm like, Vasquez has just been amazing, even though he can't hit worth a lick for the most part. But I'm wondering with the Yankees, do they try to – they kind of get themselves in this repeated pattern that's really a bad one, which is they sign A-Rod, they sign CeCe, they sign Teixeira, and you get success out of that. But you end up with some really bad years on those contracts at the end where you're just sweating it out hoping for this thing to end. But then in order to try to compete while also trying to rebuild, they still sign more contracts. So you still got Headley for that deal, which is anything under 100 is seen as probably reasonable, but it's a bad contract. Pablo Sandoval made it even worse. Congrats. The only thing that we can be happy about up here in Boston about Pablo Sandoval is that he made the Yankees overpay for Chase Headley. But we overpaid for Pablo a lot worse than you overplayed for Headley, but you still had to. But anyway, that's a bad, relatively long contract. Then you add Ellsbury, which is looking like an awful contract. It was looking awful when before he signed it. It's looking awful when he did sign it, and it's looking really, really bad now. Another year or so, I would think the Yankees are going to sign some more of those deals. So while they're trying to rebuild and develop at the same time, while win, they still keep signing these big long-term contracts. I'm wondering what they're going to do next year. They were able to, you know, go on a diet this offseason. They didn't make any monstrous additions from the free agent market, but I'm wondering what they do next year. Do they add another Ellsbury next year and get themselves in trouble? I don't know. That's something to look at from the Yankees. But we're talking National League Baseball, give or take. We're doing the Players in Focus segment here with George Kurtz from RotoExperts.com and SiriusXM Radio. I'm your host, Chris Mitchell. We're going to be talking about the National League today, though, so don't worry, guys. We're getting to it. Real quickly, though, steroid suspensions. We've had, what, three or four of them recently? And I was watching MLB Central this morning before the show came on. And one of the lead anchors, Lauren Chahadi, said that what's going on with all – we've had so many suspensions lately. What's going on? And we're hearing this thing, this talk about how the penalties need to be worse and that there's not enough of an incentive to players to stay clean. Is it your opinion that steroids are running rampant again in baseball and that are all of these suspensions? There was Chris Colabello, there's this guy Raven, there's D. Gordon. Maybe I'm missing one, but are four steroid suspensions a renewal of the onslaught of steroids in the game? To me, baseball's doing a very good job managing this. There are still people using and not getting caught, and to me, that's always going to be the biggest problem. But the fact that we only have three or we only have four, to me, steroids isn't a major issue. I think 80 games is a pretty good suspension. The fact that they also missed the playoffs, that adds even more teeth to the situation. I don't think steroids are a major problem in baseball right now, and I don't think the suspensions need to be worse. I don't think there's a breakout in people being caught. It seems like the media and some of the players are making this huge deal out of something, and I think they're blowing it out of proportion. I want to get your thoughts on it.
Well, I don't think they're blowing it out of proportion, but I do believe there's some – in other words, I'm in between on this. I don't think it's completely blown out of proportion. No, I do think that they, I'm the math guy, so I go by the numbers here. If they're catching a certain amount of guys, it does seem like all of a sudden they're catching much more than there are many more they're not catching, you know, for various reasons. I mean, and you said, and I completely agree with you, it's never going away. You know, there'll always be players or chemists that find a way to cheat the system, that they, you know, they can avoid detection with another drug that masks it, whatever it is. That will always be the case. You know, now, do I think, I estimated at one time, back during the scandal, probably 75% of the players were on it. And once again, I'm not a moral judge here. I've said before that if I was one of these fringe players, not a great player, but a fringe player fighting to keep a job in the Major League roster and that money, I'd probably stick a needle in my butt as well. You know, I understand it, all the pressure. But if I was a great player, I would not. You know, no reason to. So I think it'll always be, there, Chris. I think it is. I think rampant is too strong a word. You know, I don't think it's 75% anymore. I think it's substantially less than that, 20%. You know, I would probably go for that number. Now, the reason why I think the suspensions aren't enough, you know, the 80 games is fine. But you look at D. Gordon. 80 games suspended sounds great, right? Oh, they call him the game half the season. He's going to lose, what, $1.65 million? The five-year $50 million extension doesn't get touched. So you tell me, how is that stopping anybody from doing it? He loses $1.65 million. Sounds great. Sounds really harsh. The $50 million that's coming to him guaranteed, not touched. So he could have been doing steroids that got him that contract, which he signed in the offseason. Got caught, but hey, the new contract doesn't matter. Well, he's not that player anymore. You know, next year he's not that player he was last year. He was on steroids when he got the contract. When he put up the numbers, now he's not to say, I don't need to do it anymore. I got my contract. I don't need to be a $50 million player. You know, I could be a guy who's, a fringe regular. So that's where the problem is. You know, that's where in my mind where the problem is. You know, I think anybody who read Buster Olney's article over the weekend, he proposed a two-tiered system. You get caught, you get suspended. That's what they do now. You know, but then a second tier goes to an arbitration panel. You know, and they would rule on whether or not you tried to cheat the system. If they prove you cheated the system, your contract's gone. If the team wants to, they can get rid of that contract. If there's no proof or ends up being it was an accident, you took some cold medicine or whatever, something like that. And I imagine that happens as well, legitimately. Because what those you probably do it, I probably do it. We just, you have a cold, you take something. You can take your Benadryl or whatever it is, and maybe you have something here that's going to test you positive. That's an accident. You still get suspended because whatever you put into your body is your problem. Obviously, you weren't trying to cheat the system, so you just get your 80 games and fall. But if you were trying to cheat the system, shouldn't the club be allowed to get rid of that contract? Because you don't love that player. It's false advertising. You fraud. You're not the player we thought we were getting. And now that you're not going to be on steroids anymore, hey, you're not that player. I'm paying $50 million for a player who's not nowhere near what I was hoping to get. So that's my problem with it, Chris. You know, I think it's purely what it is to me, but it's difficult. It's extremely difficult because in most cases, other than Melky Cabrera, how would you be able to prove this? And how would you stop anybody in the last year of their current contract? You take a player or whatever. He's in the last year of a contract, going to be a free agent. His numbers haven't been so good, under his current contract. So he's going to say, hey, I'm going to do steroids. I got nothing to lose. What's the worst-case scenario? I get suspended 80 games? Fine, I'll sit out 80 and sign a contract after that. But if I don't get caught, maybe I'll put up massive numbers and get that big contract in the offseason. So is there enough disincentive here? I just don't know if there is. It sounds great. The 80 games, that it goes up to, 150 in season or whatever, sounds great. But I'm not knocking the policy. I'm just knocking the fact that I just don't think it's enough to stop certain players who do the math. They're just doing the math. That's all the sense for these players. I mean, the last year of a contract, it's worth it. I've got nothing to lose. I have nothing coming to me next year anyway. What do I care if I get suspended 80 games? If I'm in the mood for a big free agent, my numbers aren't good, take those stories. Build up those numbers. So that's maybe I need to do a study on that, a breakdown. Older players, or maybe league players that have contracts, are they doing it in the last year? What are their numbers like? Some players, I'm sure, are just ego-driven, where they're going to take it no matter what their numbers are. I think of a few guys who think should be in the Hall of Fame who did that. But other players, I think, are just doing it and say, no, nothing moves. That's a deep goal, I think, is a perfect example. If he did it last year, which I assume he did, but he thinks it takes forever to go through your system and get caught, then he did it because he knew, I'll sign the big contract, that's great, I get caught, that contract doesn't even get touched. Doesn't even get touched. That's bewildering to me, Chris. They, you know, he still gets his $50 million. I think that's idiotic.
Yeah, my problem with it, and my original instinct was essentially as harsh as yours, which was contracts should be voidable. But then as I was debating with it with Jay Jaffe from SI.com on Twitter, and I talked with him on the show a couple weeks ago about it, and just my take on it is that a contract shouldn't be voidable unless you can prove he took steroids in order to earn the contract. Now, I understand, because to me, that's the false – you're getting the false goods argument for it. You're not getting false goods if he signs the contract and he didn't take steroids to get the contract, but he tested positive after. That's not getting the false goods because you got what you thought you were getting and then he used after. But if you can prove that he used before he signed the contract, then I'm on board with that, which is that you thought you were getting a standard legal player, but it turns out he was juicing before he signed. So if you can prove that he took the steroids and essentially to earn the contract, I believe that contract was entered into in false pretenses and should be voidable. That's my take on it, because you have to have a nuanced argument to this, I think. But that's the problem, is how do you prove that they did it before the contract? I don't think they can prove it with D. Gordon, but you could for like A-Rod, because they went back and they found the records and the Biogenesis people or whatever in Florida or whatever group that was. So where you can go retrospectively and prove it before the contracts, in that case, I'm on board with that. I think that's the problem. Is that I don't think you should be able to avoid a guy's contract if you can't prove that he signed it while using beforehand. That's my problem. What I think would maybe be the best middle ground would be that the players wouldn't have to give up the voidable contract language, which is extremely important. And at the end of the day, all the players care about is looking out for the players. And let's be honest, management screws the workers all the time in every industry. So to side with management on unfairness is a little bit unfair. I mean, you look at the NFL. Because the union is so weak, the players in that league get totally screwed. Almost none of their contracts are guaranteed. And when we think that the players' contracts in the NFL are guaranteed, it's not actually true. We hear $50 million guaranteed, but sometimes it's partially guaranteed for injury. Sometimes it's partially guaranteed for performance. Sometimes it's not guaranteed for either. So even when we hear that a certain money in the NFL is guaranteed, we're actually wrong. It's not all guaranteed. So NFL players get totally hosed by management on a regular basis. And that's a league where their careers are very short. They have significant problems after their careers, and the likelihood of them getting their money is just pretty slim. So I'm not a management guy by any means, but I think what the best way to do it would be to allow for the players to not necessarily give up on the voidable contract language, because I think they're going to want that forever. That's a piece I just can't see them giving up, even though I believe for the sake of justice and fair play, it's a fair resolution. Someone who gets a contract under unfair pretenses doesn't deserve it, no matter what. But I don't think the players are going to give that up, and I don't blame them for it. They need to fight for every inch they can, because management would screw them if they could. But if they did allow them to write things into the contracts now, so rather than have them voidable based on, you know, because the players are going to argue that they don't know how they end up in their body. They all say that. They're like, I don't know what happened. It just got there. And D. Gordon sort of said that, even though one of the steroids that he got caught with was injectable. So it didn't just end up in his body because unless a girlfriend or some stalker is injecting him while he's sleeping. So that's kind of silly. But if the players were willing to sign contracts that had some kind of parameters in it that penalized them for steroids or reduced the contract because of steroids or something like that, then that I think is probably the solution. But the players have to be willing to do that. The union wouldn't have to step back from their stances. You wouldn't have to accept voidable contracts and therefore put your hands in the arbitrary process or the criminal justice process or how Major League Baseball determines whether your contract, whether what you did was bad enough for a voidable situation. They wouldn't have to have anything to do with that. It would just be in the language when you sign the contract. So say if you tested positive for steroids, your contract is automatically cut in half, or your doc's 15% of this or whatever. They could put together language like that that could foresee these possibilities. I think that would probably be the easiest way to do it from a PR perspective, and I think it would probably be the easiest way to create incentive for these players not to do it. Like you said, the penalties, $1.9 million or 1.6, whatever it is, that is a large loss for doing something wrong. I mean, think about it. If you do something wrong in your job, you're probably not going to lose anywhere near that much amount of money, obviously. And a lot of times we don't even get – I mean, you can get arrested on a Saturday and be back at work on a Monday. Nothing happens to you. It is a lot of money, but it is a small amount compared to the overall volume that he's making. The percentage is relatively small, but it's like, you know, 2% of his salary. So imagine you did something wrong and your employer took away $1,000 or $2,000 or whatever. I don't know. But I think that that's the way you have to go about it probably is you need to write it into contracts and have provisions saying if you caught the first time, this is how much you lose. If you caught a second time, this is how much. And maybe in the third, if you get caught a second time or a third time, then we have the right to fire you for cause and we don't owe you the money. Maybe that's how you do it. But I think that's how it has to be done, and that would allow the players to agree to it because there is support. You hear a lot of players coming out and saying, we want this stricter. We want people to stop cheating because we're not cheating. And so there is support to do that. I just don't think there'd be support for voidable contracts. I think it has to be the language inside of it. But one of my bigger problems, just to end this rant here, is the media is making a huge deal about how so many people are caught. There's something like 750 Major League Baseball players in the game right now. Two of them aren't even major players. Colabello had a nice season last year, but he's a minor player. This guy Raven wouldn't even be a guy that anyone would know about if he hadn't got caught using steroids. So he's a nobody. And then you've got the high-profile guy, which created the conversation. Because there was no – I was talking about it last week when Colabello got caught, but it wasn't a major issue on MLB Network. It wasn't a major issue on ESPN where they were screaming for steroids to be worse, for the penalties to be worse. And that steroids were running rampant again. Those kinds of, you know, that language or that tone was not happening until the one high profile guy got busted. I think there are a lot more people using than being caught, obviously. But when three guys get caught out of 750 in the major leagues, and the Raven guy was in the minors, so he almost doesn't even apply. That shouldn't be causing the uproar. This is how the system works. You catch a few guys, and it's like the IRS. Everybody cheats the IRS, but the IRS catches two or three high-profile people, and it scares a bunch of people into doing it legally. That's why you hear about Martha Stewart going to jail for tax evasion. It isn't because she deserved it for what she did. It's because she's a high-profile person. The IRS is hoping to use her to scare the millions of other people that are cheating anyway. That's the whole point, and that's what this really is. You catch D. Gordon to scare everybody else, and the media is jumping right on board with it. They're playing right into that narrative. The fact is, two guys got caught. I would actually expect more people to get caught. Two people out of 750, I would think that there would be a higher percentage. My concern wouldn't be that you need more penalties or that they're not doing enough or the disincentive isn't high enough. My only concern is that baseball isn't catching enough. That's the problem. Is that more people have to be cheating and they're not catching them. To me, only catching two and only one of them is a significant player, that tells me that the system is working better than I would have ever expected, because I would have expected more people to get caught. That's my concern. The media is talking about it like it's running rampant, and it's not. They caught one guy that matters. To me, that's a very small number.
Well, overall, you're right. It is a small number, but it's they've caught more than what you're talking about. But you're telling me the minor leaguers, guys are you? Bottom line is, guys are using. How many? I don't think anybody knows. Like I said, I'm estimating between 10% and 20%, so it's a small number. As far as like I said, overall 700 and blah blah. We don't do the math. If I go 40-man roster times 30 teams, so there's 1,200 players. You know, and that's, once again, those 1,200 are the ones covered under the CBA, and that's what's getting caught. It is a small number. It's a minute percent. It's not even 1%. But I think in the media, we have to, you and I are in the media, so I guess we're part of it. But to me, we're going to sensationalize things, you know, headlines and all this other stuff. We have to remember that as well. That's sort of what they do. It's annoying, yes, but it's sort of what they do. Is it blown out of proportion? Yes. But what's not blown out of proportion is that we're catching more this year than last year. And I think that's really what we should be focusing on here. That the numbers are going up, not down. And we all know we're not catching all of them. You know, there are guys, like I said, chemistry is always going to be ahead of the testing. You know, they'll find ways to mask it or a drug that's not tested for, whatever. You know, and players are lying all the time. You brought a perfect example of D. Gordon. No, I don't know how, but yet it was an injectable. You don't know how he got injected? You know, I don't know about you, Chris. I always know when there's a needle in my body. Always know. You know, no one's giving me a needle without me knowing. So it's, you know, Ryan Braun over lying he did. You know, it's just, the guy, he trained me. He did, Well, it's just, it's annoying about all the players. Bottom line is, listen, it's a shame we have to talk about this. It really is. You know, as far as what you wrote about the putting at the contract, I believe that's strictly prohibited in the CBA, so they can't do that. Once again, I think what's going to happen is, I think there is going to be some kind of, Buster Rowley suggested, maybe not exactly to what he said, but some kind of second tier, some way to get that contract voided. You know, I don't know what that'll be. I don't think it'll be, something where it'll be an independent panel. You know, they hear the case, all the evidence. You know, it can't be the baseball commissioner. It can't be Manfred making the decision. You know, Tony Clark really can't be involved. It has to be somebody independent. You know, they hear the case. Oh, you were trying to cheat the system. You know, you did this on purpose. Guess what? You're done. You know, and then he took some cough medicine. You know, he took some nasal whatever. That's why he got caught. Okay, you got your 80 games. You know, be careful next time. You know, that certain thing. Make sure you call your player rep, your union, to make sure to find out that substance was legal to put in your body. That sort of thing. I think that's what's going to happen eventually, somewhere along those lines. Only because I just think, you know, I'm not a management guy either, but I think they need to be protected. Where, you know, these guys are doing anything they can to get that big contract. And they, as you put up perfectly, in football, those guys aren't guaranteed. You know, they can go away anytime. If anybody will tell you in football, whatever they tell you, this guy signed a 7-year, $84 million contract with $40 million guarantees. The only thing you care about are the true guarantees. You know, the $84 million, no player is going to get that $84 million. You know, that kind of throw you away in 2 or 3 years. You only care about the guaranteed money in years 1 and 2, and then fully guaranteed after that. That's all you care about. In football, you hear it all the time. You know, this guy, oh, he's not going to get released this year. He still has $3 million guarantees coming to him. Next year, though, even though it's kind of says he's on a contract of $4 million a year, he's probably going bye-bye. No more guaranteed money. Baseball, it's all guaranteed. You know, that's the baseball union. That's why they're the strongest in the world, most people believe. You know, all that money is guaranteed. No matter what he does, he can commit murder. And he's probably going to get that money. So just the way it is. Baseball union is very strong. But I do think there'll be some kind of agreement, mainly because of what you said. Yes, you know, we all heard Justin Verlander come out and land base. And other players have done the same thing. The players are the ones who are pushing this. They're going to push their union. The union's not going to want to do to give up those contracts, but there could be some kind of independent panel they can agree upon. And this will be the hardest thing, getting these two sides to agree. It's not quite as acrimonious as football with Goodell and DeMar Smith, but it's not exactly on friendly terms either. But if they can get to some kind of agreement there of what kind of panel can hear it, I think that might be the best way to go. But the bottom line is, Chris, you know, I guess that could scare people into not doing it. You know, oh, my God, no, I might lose my contract. It could. But, you know, you're never going to get rid of it completely. You're just never going to get rid of it completely. It's not going away. There's too much money involved. There's too much money for these guys involved, and people are going to do whatever they think they have to do to get that money.
We're talking on National League Recap here on a podcast to be named later. I'm your host, Chris Mitchell, and with me today is George Kurtz from RotoExperts.com, as well as SiriusXM Radio. He hosts some programs on the weekends. We are going to start talking about the National League as we went off on our little bit of a rant about the steroid testing. It is a topic of discussion, so we thought we'd bring it up today, and we went a little longer than expected with it, but I think we ran it into the ground here. We'll move on now to the division-by-division, an inside look at the horse races. And let's start with the National League East. You've got one of your teams there. You're not a Mets fan, but you're in the Mets region there. 16-8, they're doing pretty well, the Mets, but they are behind the Washington Nationals at 18-7. Let me ask you about these Washington Nationals, because 18-7 is what this team was supposed to be last year. I think most people thought this team would be better, even though you look on paper, their team on paper probably doesn't look as good as it did last year. They lost Jordan Zimmermann. They lost some offensive players as well, and they didn't add a whole bunch of pieces. As it turns out, some of the players they lost weren't very good last year anyway, but going into the season, it looked like the Nationals were loaded in 2015, and they had a 500 season, but by expectations, that was a disappointment. The Cubs are getting all the hype, and we'll get into the NL Central in a minute, but at 18-7, are these Nationals better than you even expected, or is this just a nice start for a team that you thought would end up having a good year?
I'm going to go with the latter. Nice start for a team I thought would have a good year. I thought the Nationals would be a good team. Love the pitching staff. And I think part of the reason is I've always liked Joe Ross and Tanner Roa. You know, so I thought they'd be good. Gio Gonzalez, I think, is a fine number three. Strasburg, of course, I like Scherzer. And it is a good pitching staff. It's not the Mets, you know, but who does have those four aces? But it's a good, you know, any team would love to have these five guys. So it's a really good pitching staff there. My question with the Nats is always going to be the hitting. You know, Bryce Harper, yes, MVP, fine. But after that, you know, you don't know what you're going to get as much. You know, Jason Wells, can he have a bounce back here? I don't like what they're doing at shortstop. You know, Espinosa is still playing. I think Trey Turner should be called up. What is Espinosa batting? 185 coming in yesterday, something silly like that? And we know he's not a shortstop. He's not very good defensively either. Anthony Rendon. You know, what's up with him? Are we starting to think now that, I know I am, that maybe, you know, we should have given a pass for last year, all the injuries. But you know what? Maybe it wasn't the injuries. Maybe 2014 was the weird year where he had the career year and he's never going to do that again. Maybe he's not that player. You know, I'm starting to wonder about that. You know, that maybe he's just not that guy, and most of us will roll on him. So I'm wondering about that. So that's where my questions are, Chris. The offense, can it sustain? You know, what are they going to call Trey Turner? You know, I know, seriously-wise, I get so many questions about Lucas Giolito. I already mentioned the five starters. Unless someone gets hurt or really lost and roll off, fall off the table, they can't pitch anymore, there's not a spot for him. So the Nationals can play it, change it, make sure he's coming after the Super 2 deadline. He'll be up eventually. No one goes through a season where it's extremely rare with just five starting pitchers. Eventually, Washington will need a starter, and they'll bring him up. But, you know, as for when, that's anyone's guess. I don't think it's until June at the earliest. Actually, I think they need an injury for that. So I think Washington's a very good team, Chris. They're going to be there at the end. They fell apart last year for whatever reason. Clubhouse chemistry, blah, blah, blah. I don't see that happening again. You know, I think it's a two-horse race between them and the Mets all season.
And when us up here in Boston, and I think with the bias of the Northeast media, everyone talks about how baseball is better when the Yankees and the Red Sox are both competitive and fighting for their own division. I think that about the Philadelphia Phillies and the NL East. When the Phillies are competitive in the National League, I think baseball is better. Not, there are some teams I don't care if they're competitive. If Milwaukee Brewers are competitive, good for the Milwaukee Brewers fans, but I don't care. It doesn't impact my thoughts on how baseball is going. But when the Philadelphia Phillies are a disgrace versus a competitor, to me, that elevates the National League discussion in baseball in general. The Phillies are supposed to be really, really bad, yet they're 15-11. Vincent Velasquez looks like he might be an ace, though I think that's getting the cart a little bit ahead of the horse there. But he's at the very least, he's been very, very good, and he's going to be what looks like a good pitcher. So things are looking brighter in Philly than I think maybe we thought they would before the season started. But are you stunned? Is this maybe the story of the National League? There are lots of interesting stories, and you can make arguments for lots of them. But at 15-11, are they the bigger surprise maybe in all the National League that they've been that good so far, considering that they're just trying to ride out the string and get these prospects up? What's your thought on just the degree of the surprise with the Phillies?
Yeah, I think if you go for the happy surprise, it has to be the Phillies. Now, do I think they can keep it up all year long? No. But I think if you're a Philly fan, what you're seeing is that their future is bright. Because let's face it, they don't even have most of their call-ups up. They have a strong minor league system. You know, those boys are coming. You know, they're going to be able to compete with this team, make this team even better. So I like Philadelphia's future. I don't think they can sustain it this year. And you mentioned Velasquez looks great. So they don't see him as an ace, but he's a top-three starter. You know, good for them. They got Aaron Nola's up. Wait till they get, you know, J.B. Crawford and guys like this. You know, I think Philadelphia, if I'm a Phillies management, I want to, you know, sort of, you know, rein in the horses a little bit. You know, don't let things get out of control. Oh, my God, we're going to compete this year. Let's call up some of these youngsters. Make sure they're ready. You know, follow your original game plan, which is probably, you know, this rebuilding year, maybe next year too. You know, but make sure these guys are ready when we call them up and keep building for the future. That's my only thing with the Phillies. You know, just rein that in a little bit. Now, it's great you're playing so well. It really is. But you're not up there with the Nationals and Mets in that division yet. You're on your way. I think you will compete. Like I said, year two, I think they're going to compete very well. And they're going to have a ton of money. But if they need to, so, you know, put a free agent or two in there, they can do that. But with Philadelphia, love how they're playing. Future is bright. Just, you know, don't overdo things. Don't let the fans push you. You know, pushing guys up too soon before they're ready, which then slows them down long term.
And the St. Louis Cardinals, as I mentioned in the opening, they're leading the National League in runs scored with 153. They're leading in home runs with 40. The Atlanta Braves are at the bottom of the National League in runs scored with 80, and they've got five home runs. That's right, five. Five home runs. So the Cardinals are 153 runs scored with 40 homers. The Braves are 80 runs scored with five homers. Is this Braves team the worst team you have ever seen? I mean, 5 home runs and only 80 runs scored, almost half as many as the Cardinals in runs scored, and 1/8 the number of home runs. Is that just downright putridly bad and historically bad? Is this team really that disgraceful? I mean, wow. I'm not usually surprised by futility, but those numbers kind of knocked me off my seat a little bit.
How many home runs do the Braves have?
5. As in all 5 of your fingers. One hand of homers.
Just wanted to make sure I heard that. Yeah, 5 home runs. I mean, hey, the Braves have a definition of a team. They're tanking. We saw the players they traded in the offseason. They're trading anybody and everybody. And that's they're not done. They'll keep trading. I think, I think going to fantasy. Fantasy fans have been complaining. Oh my God, really keeps taking save chances. This guy, blah blah blah. I don't think he's going to be annoyed with the closer, but he is going to continue to get save chances because the team wants to trade him by the deadline. Trade Jim Johnson by the deadline. They may not get a high return, but it doesn't matter. They can take anything. Andrew Ciarte, when he comes back, I think he could be a trade guy by the deadline. Anyone they don't see as a major piece of the puzzle is going bye bye. And it makes sense in today's baseball, today's MLB, it makes sense. We've seen it work. It worked for the Astros, worked for the Cubs. Braves are going by the same model. Strip it down, get our salary, our payroll as low as possible, trade away anyone that's really not long term for us. Eric Ivar could be gone. Anyone that's not essential long term, send them away. Send them away. I'm sure the Braves see. Oh my God, the Mets are going to be good for years if that pitching's there. The Nationals, same thing, and they'll spend money. We see the Philadelphia Phillies, they have a great minor league system. They got to do what they got to do to compete with this division. This division has been very good for a long time now. So they got to do what they got to do. So I don't care whatsoever. But that being said, yes, it's a very, very, very bad team.
They've been caught stealing more than they've hit home runs. They've been caught stealing 7 times. They've got 5 homers. And Freddie Freeman has got 3 of those. So if he was injured again, then they'd only have, I believe that he has 3 homers. So they'd only have 2. I mean, think about that. They've been caught stealing more than homers. That's like Billy Hamilton. Billy Hamilton is going to be caught stealing more homers than he hits homers. That's what the Braves are doing right now. I mean, that's how pathetic that team is. Tanking is one thing, and this is getting close to it. I mean, the NBA, the teams actually do tank. I truly believe that they lose on purpose. That has never been an accusation against baseball. And the Houston Astros did a pretty good job in trying to do that, and look at them. It succeeded, so it worked. I'm not saying the Braves are trying to lose because they are playing all of their players. I mean, in basketball, they actually sit some of their better players. They play them fewer minutes in order to make sure that they lose. Baseball doesn't do that, so I guess technically that would be what you would call tanking. The Braves aren't sitting Freddie Freeman so that they can lose. So they're not tanking like the NBA does, but I mean, that roster is so bad. They're tanking by just removing talent, and that's amazing. 5 home runs, 7 caught stealing, 80 total runs scored. That is amazing. Anyway, we're talking National League Baseball with George Kurtz here on a podcast to be named later. We just wrapped up the NL East. Let's move on to the Central. Everyone's talking about how the Cubs are the runaway best team in all of baseball, and they are winning relatively easily. This is a really good team. All of their pitchers seem to pitch. Jason Hamill, who was their 4th starter, went out and pitched a pretty nice ball game last night against the Pirates. Obviously, Jake Arrieta is a beast. Lester's good. John Lackey's even looked pretty good. But they only have 1 less loss than the Nationals, so they're essentially equal. Are the Cubs actually the runaway, by far and away, best team in all of baseball? Or are they just really good, but there are other teams that are right there? I mean, the Pirates are only 3 games back in the win column, 5 back in the loss. Like I said, the Nationals are right there. San Francisco's a few games back. But are the Cubs by far and away the class of the National League, or are we anointing them a little bit too quickly here?
Oh, I think they're one of the best teams. Sure, I don't want to say that they have the runaway best. No. If you want to say they're the best, okay. I don't think I'd fight with you too much, but the runaway bets, like they're so much better, like they're going to win 120 games, no one can come close. No, I'm not going to go that far. I'm not going to say they're the 99 Yankees. No, I can't go in that direction, but they're a very good team. Right now, I might give them the favorite, but I got to put the Nationals and the Mets in pretty close, mainly because of the pitching staff. I do wonder when it comes down to a 7-game series. Lester, okay, to a certain degree, but these guys are not. Scherzer, Strasburg, they're not. Syndergaard, Harvey, DeGrom, and all the eight of the Mets can throw out there. Their offense is great for the regular season. How are those home runs really going to hit when it comes down to that kind of series? So that's where my difference lies there. You know, yeah, these guys are over, but they're monsters. You know, they're going to put up, when I think of these teams here, you know, a little Looney Tunes Bugs Bunny fan, I think of a baseball episode where, you know, see with the Yankee team, you know, big, you know, sluggers with, you know, Harry Chash hitting the ball 900 miles off Bugs. You know, one after the other, after the other. That's what I think about the Cubs. You know, one slugger after the other. It's a nightmare for opposing pitchers to go through. But what's the old axiom? Good pitching beats good hitting. So that'd be my problem in the playoffs there. But that being said, yes, I think they're the best team in the Central. I think they're, if not the best team in the National League, certainly no further down than 1, 2, 3. It's close to me. I think this is, and I don't think I'm going out on a limb here, I think this will be their best chance to break the curse, the 100 years of the World Series since I've been alive. You know, they're better than the 84 team, better than the Moises Alou team. So I think this is it. But I don't think this is the only year either. I think they might get better. This is another team. You know, they can be good for a couple of years now. They have money. You know, if they want to go out and get another ace, you know, that's what I think they're missing. Because one more pitcher, I'd love to see a lot better. And by one more, I mean a good pitcher. You know, one more ace to match up with the Nats, match up with the Mets, I'd be a lot happier.
Yeah, you're nitpicking a little bit, but when you're talking about the difference between winning the World Series and not winning the World Series, a lot of times we're talking about incremental differences in teams, and I agree with you. As good as they are 1 through 4, at least 1 through 4, they're not quite as good at 1 and 2. and that's a very small difference, but yet that small difference can be the difference when you're talking about the playoffs and getting from the playoffs to the World Series. Ask the A's. All those years, they were really, really good, but they could never quite get over the hump. And Billy Beane kept trying to do things to try to go from being a dominant team or a really good team to a playoff team to a World Series winner. And that last piece, the easiest way to try to pinpoint that is, like you said, add another ace. And while their number two is really, really good, there's some competition, for some really good aces overall and when you're competing for that last inch. I talked about the Cardinals, again, leading the National League in runs scored and home runs, but the staff is an issue. They're 13-13. Are the Cardinals a legitimate wild card, at least a wild card contender, or are they kind of outperforming, trying to stay competitive, but eventually they're going to fall back and miss the playoffs? Just, I think coming into the season, a lot of people thought maybe this was the year the Cardinals take a step back and they don't become part of the playoff picture. But at 13-13, they're keeping themselves at least in it for now. Are they going to keep it going all season, or is this just 26 games, and by the time we get near 70 and 80 games, the Cardinals will no longer really be there?
Well, no, the Cardinals are not the Cardinals of the old. You mentioned the stats early on with all the home run figures, so they can hit. You know, and their pitching's not terrible. It's just not what we're used to it being, really, when you think about it. Listen, Wainwright might get better. You know, I don't know if he's going to be an ace again. I think it was certainly better than when he was in April. Had a decent start last night. You know, Carlos Martinez might be their ace. You know, this kid's good. My only question with Carlos Martinez is, can he last the entire season? You know, he hasn't done that before. Prove it to me you can do it, I'll believe. You know, Mike Leake and Jaime Garcia are what they are. Good veteran starters, going to give you good starts, you know, but they're not great. They're really number threes and fours, which is where they're slotted, so that's fine. So that's my thing with Mike Walker. I have no problem with him. Once again, it's a good solid team. You know, so I think they're going to be there, yes. I don't think they'll win with the division. And for the wild card, the problem is for the wild card, man, the National League is sort of a league of haves and have-nots. So we know one of the Washington or the Mets has to win the East. Chicago, let's give them the Central. San Francisco and the Giants, San Francisco Giants and the Dodgers, one has to win the division, one probably the wild card. So Dodgers, Cardinals, Pirates, Mets. And listen, if you want to say, well, one of us wins the division, fine. You want to put the Nats instead of the Mets here, or the Giants here instead of the Dodgers, whatever. I'm not going to argue that. What I'm saying is you have four teams, four good teams, two spots. So, you know, they could be a good team, have a good season, but lose out. You know, and there are going to be two good teams that are not going to make the playoffs. You know, and that could be a problem. And isn't there always a surprise team, too, that's in it? You know, maybe the Marlins stay in it. You know, they're 12-12 right now. Maybe they hang in. I don't think the Phillies can. You know, maybe, you know, the Arizona Diamondbacks figure it out. If he thought was going to play better. You know, and in that division, they just might. You know, maybe they're in it. So they could be, you know, a fifth team. So that's my problem here, Chris. Good team, not really worried about them. but they may not be good enough. That's the issue.
Yeah, and I would never count out the Cardinals because they do seem to be one of the better run organizations in all of baseball, and they seem to be able to be competitive and outperform. I mean, they were one of, if not the best record in the National League last year. I don't have the exact numbers in front of me, but they were at the top. They're one of the two or three best records in all of baseball last year, and I didn't think they were one of the two or three best teams on paper. I thought they were a good team. Don't get me wrong. I thought they'd have a chance at the playoffs. I thought the Cardinals were a good team, but I didn't think of them as one of the two best in all of baseball when last year's season started. And yet they were. So they are able to outperform expectations. That's a great place to play. They just have a great atmosphere, a great organization. They do things right there. And so I would never count them out. But I do think they're a little bit undergunned. I guess that's how I put it. They're a little bit undergunned, but you don't count out the underdog. And it's odd to say that, but the Cardinals have a lot of the intangibles that can lead them to outperform what you might normally expect based on what you see on paper. That's how I look at the Cardinals this year. I am concerned about Wainwright, but I was concerned about that coming into the season, so that's no surprise. I have the same sentiments about Carlos Martinez. Pure stuff, if you want to send someone out there for six innings, completely rested, he's their eighth, I would say, without much argument at the moment. But can he go more than 165 innings without wearing down, without his performance diminishing, or without him getting injured? Those are things we all saw last year. We'll see if he can do that, because that's always been an issue. That was always a concern. When he was stuck in the bullpen longer than maybe a lot of people thought he should be, it was partially because of durability. They wondered if he could go 200 innings a year. There was a thought that he may always be a reliever, even though the stuff was so good that he had the ability to start. So we'll see. He wasn't really able to hold up last year, but that's not uncommon for guys in their first seasons as a starter too. So while durability was a concern, it's natural for guys in their first full season as a starter to wear down at the end and not be able to go 200 innings. Rookies don't usually get asked to throw that many innings. So last year, what happened to Carlos Martinez isn't a surprise, but until he proves it to people, of course, it's natural to have the doubts, and that's what we're looking at. But if he can throw 200 really good innings, that'll definitely go a long way in helping the Cardinals at least fight for that playoff spot. And then, as we've seen, you make it into the playoffs, it's anyone's ballgame. It's a crapshoot after that. So the Cardinals, I think, are still in it. I agree. But it wouldn't shock me if on the 4th of July or on July 30th or something like that, that the Cardinals just didn't quite have what it was needed specifically in the rotation to be able to stake up there with how good some of these teams are. The Mets, the Nationals, the Pirates, and the Cubs. Those four teams alone, never mind some of the other respectable clubs, it's tough. It's definitely a tough road. Let's wrap it up with the final division here, the NL West. I would ask you about any specific team, but I'm not sure. I don't believe in the Rockies. And, of course, I don't think the San Diego Padres are good. So that leaves the Giants, the Dodgers, and the Arizona Diamondbacks. But I don't know what to make of these teams. I was a little stunned and wasn't really in love with what Arizona did in the offseason, but obviously they went for it. The Dodgers lost, didn't really add a whole lot that would make them significantly better. So I don't know what to make of them. And then the Giants made two big additions, neither of which I really loved, and I definitely didn't like it when you factor in the money, but yet they're leading the division right now. So the Giants, the Dodgers, and Arizona, a weird group of teams. I'm not sure what to think of them. What do you think of them?
Well, I think the Giants and the Diamondbacks may regret not taking advantage of the slow start by L.A. Now, I bet L.A. had a crazy offseason, and not crazy in a good way. You know, I mean, letting Greinke go because you wouldn't give him the extra year, I thought that was kind of silly for a team that really money doesn't matter. Right? I mean, their pitching staff is, it seems like if you pull the wrong string, it's all going to come apart except for Kershaw. Right? I mean, it's just scary, really. So I think that, like I said, I think the Giants and D-backs may regret that they also got the slow starts. I think they're both decent teams. You know, Giants are a good team. Diamondbacks, I have my doubts about. So I think they'll regret that in the end, where they could have, you know, they could have a 4 or 5 game lead now. Instead, they're also going to be tied, except for the Diamondbacks 3 or 4 games behind. You know, even the Diamondbacks losing Pollock right before the season, I mean, that's terrible. He wasn't for a year. You know, he was for a month, 2 months. He was for a year, you know, more than likely the year. That's a killer. I mean, that's just a killer. So that had to hurt. Why, Greinke, okay, he's pitching better of late, so maybe just a slow start. What's up with Shelby Miller? I mean, is the ballpark getting to him? You know, he pitched so well at Atlanta last year, he didn't get the W's, but the team couldn't hit, but pitched well. This year, it's the opposite. You know, he's not getting anything. He's just terrible. So what's up there? They need him to perform. You know, it's concerning somewhat. I think the team's going to hit enough. Don't know if they have enough pitching. I think that's going to be their issue there. Giants, I'm really not worried about. You know, I think it is the slow start. Cueto looks very good, except for, I guess he can't pitch against his former team in the Reds. But he looks fine. You know, Samardzija, he's up, down still. Not as bad as last year so far. Bumgarner, he's had a gem on Sunday. So I think Giants are going to be fine. I think they're going to be there. I said Giants and Dodgers competing for a playoff spot at the end. Still believe that. The Dodgers, I'm shaky on. I don't like the Dodgers. I don't like how this team is constructed. And you look at it, there's just issues all over the place. I mentioned the pitching staff. You know, whenever anybody asks me about hockey, I always go to the goaltender. Baseball, it's always the pitching staff. Football is the quarterback. That generally tells you how good a team you're going to have. And when you look at the Dodgers, I say, Kershaw, all world, great, fine, fantastic. Not going to argue with you there. But after that, okay, Kazmir, good luck. I mean, he's not throwing as hard. Kenta Maeda, he looks great. But what happens when, all that video of him gets around the league? And they figure, keeps figuring out a little better how to hit him. He's not throwing the ball 98 miles an hour. He's a pitcher. He knows how to locate. Like I said, in, out, up, down, change speeds. He knows how to do all that. But sooner or later, the league's going to start hitting him. I don't think he's an ace. I think he's more of a probably a number three. Maybe a number two. But either way, he's not the problem either. Yeah, I think he'll be fine. But I think there's going to be some downside there. Alex Wood, Stripling, Goldsinger, Rue when he comes back, McCarthy, Brett Anderson. I mean, wow. How does a team with a $1 billion payroll let this happen? How does a team with a $1 billion payroll where money was no option let this happen? If you were going to let Greinke go, and you did, if you didn't want to pay that extra, then why didn't you go out and get some money? Why isn't there somebody here you can rely on? I mean, where would this team be without Maeda? If he was just average, but so bad, they'd be in deep, deep trouble. So I think they need additions. If they don't make an addition, at least one, maybe two, I think they're in trouble. I really do think they're in trouble. Their offense is good, but not good enough to hit themselves out of this. So I have some issues here. Like I said, the offense is solid, but not great. Peterson, he's a home run or nothing guy. Corey Seager, we're really still waiting for him to become a superstar. He hasn't quite done it yet. Still waiting for him. Puig, I think, does bounce back. But I don't know if he's ever, in fantasy terms, I don't know if he's ever going to be an outfield one. And I think he's just going to do better than he did last year. But I don't know if we're ever going to see the guy who's going to hit 25 home runs, steal 25 bases, run into walls, be Superman. Don't quite think we're ever going to see that again.
Yeah, the Dodgers, and one thing that used to happen, and being a Yankees fan, you know it, and the Red Sox as well, the Yankees used to always go out and grab. They'd pluck that ace away from a team that couldn't afford them when the money came for real and when they fell out of contention. So they went. The Yankees would just go out and just make a trade, and you really can't do that anymore. There are too many teams that are competing at the end of the season that they're not willing to give up their aces anymore. So like a Johnny Cueto who moved last year, that doesn't happen as often, and it definitely doesn't happen in as large a scale. There'll be a couple of really good pitchers on the market at the free agent deadline, and everybody will be competing to try to get them. And then you've got teams that normally, when money was a bigger deal, now you see teams like, Johnny Cueto went to the Royals. 15 years ago, would you ever have thought that the Royals would have traded for Johnny Cueto to try to win a World Series? That would have never happened when the Yankees and the Red Sox were spending $150 million and the Royals were spending $27 or something. I mean, so while some free agents are free agents to be or top flight pitchers are available, there aren't a lot of them, and there's a lot more teams that want them, which makes the price almost outright ridiculous. So it's not like the Dodgers can just go out and pluck a starting pitcher away from someone. Maybe they can. And they've got some pretty nice prospects where they can probably afford to do that if the situation comes up. But it's extremely expensive to do it, and there's a lot of competition in order to try. So if the Dodgers, that's maybe the biggest thing, is letting Greinke go like that was a shocker. It doesn't seem to make a lot of sense, like you said, because essentially it seemed like it was over 1 year. If you're willing to pay somebody huge money, you're really telling me that 1 year is the difference? Unless it doesn't matter? And with the Dodgers, it does matter. If they want to win, they need a Greinke, and they seem like – it almost seemed like they called Greinke's bluff. They said, "We don't believe that this is out there." And Greinke said, "Okay, well, it is out there." And boom, he was gone. I think that's what happened. I don't think the Dodgers said, "We don't want to spend that extra year," though they probably didn't. I think they probably didn't believe that Greinke was going to go to another team for what he ended up doing. I think they were totally floored by the D-backs. The larger story is, yes, their staff isn't very good. They have a large group of mediocre pitchers, and it's not going to be easy for them to get that ace. We talked about it with the Nationals and the Mets and the Cubs. The Cubs number two, while the Cubs number two is really good, it's not quite as good as the Nats or the Mets. Well, the Dodgers number two isn't even close to as good as the Cubs, never mind the Nats and the Mets. So, and it's not going to be easy to find them. That's, I guess, the larger point. So you look at this team and Seager's batting .242. That surprises me. I thought he was having a better season than that. He's only got an on-base percentage of .303. But that surprised me. I thought he was hitting better. I have him in a few fantasy teams, and I was seeing 2-for-3s and things like that, and I thought he was hitting for a little bit better. So that's a little bit of a disappointment. But it's an interesting division nonetheless. It's going to be interesting going forward. We've been talking National League Baseball here with George Kurtz from rotoexperts.com, as well as the SiriusXM radio host. You can follow him on Twitter at George Kurtz, or just head on over to rotoexperts.com and read his fantasy stuff. He covers all the sports. He has the closer report over there, so if you want to know what's going on with the insanity that is the closer position, we'll get into that in future weeks. We don't have time to do it today, but maybe we'll get George on here to talk about closers on a day-to-day basis, on a weekly basis at least. So we'll do what we can to do that. But, George, thanks for coming on talking baseball with us today. Good luck, and sorry to hear about your little housing incident there. Hopefully everything will get worked out, and you'll get your man cave back up and running full speed, maybe even a little bit better, hopefully.
Man cave is actually fine. It was the room next to the man cave. I see my kids' playroom, so they're the ones who are in tears. I'll be in tears when I get the final bill.
That is what it is. That's George Kurtz. Thanks a lot, George. Look forward to talking more baseball with you later on in the week or hopefully next week.
Thank you very much, Chris. See you then.
All right, everybody. We covered it today. We covered steroids. We covered D. Gordon. We covered the horse races. We looked at it for the entire National League from the east to the central and all the way out west. That's our program for today here on A Podcast to Be Named Later. I'm your host, Chris Mitchell. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. If you'd like to be part of the program, we do take suggestions. We talk baseball with you during the week, but we're more than happy to bring your suggestions right here to the program and talk about it. You can do that for me over on Twitter, at CJMitch73, or you can join our Facebook page, A Podcast to Be Named Later. If you'd like to access the podcast online or you'd like to read any of my baseball content, head on over to minorleagueball.com. Again, that is minorleagueball.com. I also write about hockey and daily fantasy baseball over at fantasydraft.com. So if you're interested in either of those from a daily fantasy sports perspective, you can go over to fantasydraft.com. If you want to read about minor league prospects and their fantasy values, you can do that. I do a little bit of that over at minorleagueball.com. Hopefully I'm going to pick up and provide more content there. But if you also you can find that over at rotoexperts.com, where I publish at least one article a week about the fantasy values of minor league prospects. So you can do that over at rotoexperts.com. Thanks, everybody, for joining in today. Thanks again to George Kurtz for talking baseball with us. Enjoy the remainder of the week. We're going to have some other programs coming up later in the week. Hopefully, I'll keep you updated and posted over on Twitter, at CJMitch73. I don't know the topics yet. I don't know the guests yet, but I'm expecting at least a podcast or two to be done later on in the week as well. So maybe even tomorrow. Thanks, everybody. Be good.